And the United Nations hasn't been able to do anything about it. They are now trying to take Israel to the International Criminal Court, and this is something that's been resisted by the US and even Germany. So the problem with the United Nations is that at the end of the day, who controls what happens? It's the country that has the power, that has nuclear weapons. And therefore, it's the UN is a bit of a joke, because even if they were to condemn Israel for its crimes, which even that they're not able to do, they wouldn't be able to physically do anything to bring Israel to justice.
Monique, it's true, the West's silence towards continued Israeli attacks on Syria as tactical support for the aggression. They also attribute the escalation in the attacks to Israel's anger over the victory of Syria and the axis of resistance in the face of the years-long militancy against the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The militancy is widely seen as a foreign-backed plot to bring about regime change in Syria and partition it into weak states in favor of Israel's geostrategic interests. The militancy failed. Now Syria is nearly in full control of its territory and is on track towards stability.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim, Islam, my deen. Allah, my Lord,
His word, Quran,
Muhammad, Prophet,
praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, brothers and sisters, other life forms. You are listening to Youth Station, only on IRIB English Radio. I am your humble host and friend, I hope, Zainab.
I'm actually really humble.
Lies.
I'm Mehdi. I'm also here trying to cope up with the situation. The virus, I mean.
Sure. Sure, that's what you meant. Talking about the virus thing.
Which is a global thing.
But some countries are more affected than the other.
Yeah, they are, yeah. Countries like North Korea aren't, are they?
Well,
there's something special about this country, isn't it?
The country where
North Korea.
In. Oh.
North Korea.
Why?
Do you know if it's infected with corona or not?
No.
It shouldn't be, because it doesn't allow anyone to enter.
Awesome.
And doesn't allow anyone to
awesome.
Leave and stuff like that. Is that awesome?
Yeah, I think it's great.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I really do.
You're not allowed to leave the country, you're not allowed to visit the country, and you're not allowed to go around as a tourist, as a free person. You're constantly under surveillance.
So?
Okay.
Yeah, I've got
but
to say.
Back to the COVID thing. A lot of us have been struggling and going through a lot of hardships, even tragedies due to the COVID. Yes, I just pulled a...
Yeah, you did. Anyway, go on. Nice deal.
The question we're going to be discussing today is, how can we deal with anger or sadness or frustration or confusion or boredom that's caused by the Ronas, the COVID-19, and the state of lockdown?
I think submission is the key.
Definitely.
Sort of. Right.
Yeah, just being at peace with the state of the world. I mean, no one who ever tried to run away from something inevitable ever found that peace. Do you remember the movie Time Machine?
No. What happens?
So it's a period movie, and I think it was made a kajillion years ago. And the guy who plays in it His name is Guy. Guy Fleury, isn't it? Guy something. Guy Pierce? Guy something. I don't know. He falls in love, and then with this wonderful woman, his fiancée, she's gorgeous, she's intelligent, she's funny, she's caring, da 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 da, and then she dies. I know.
Isn't that funny?
Anyway, and then, bam, she dies. He is distraught and depressed and distressed, and he built a time machine to bring back his sweetheart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he travels back in time. He brings her back, I mean, to a time before she dies. She dies in front of the flower store first time. He goes, like, an hour before she dies, he tries to, you know, navigate his way and dodge every possibility that would lead them to that flower store to prevent her death.
Mm-hmm.
And as he is taking a route, I think, I don't remember, I watched it a long time ago. As he was taking a route to prevent going to the, to avoid the flower store, his girl gets run over by a carriage.
Wow. You know, I rate these writers. Is the director the same as the writer? No, right? The person who writes the movie.
Yeah.
I rate these people because they've got this view of the world, such writers. For example, you reminded me of another movie, I don't remember the name, that this person realizes that his family, the men in the family, they can travel in time, but just...
About Time.
About Time.
I love that movie.
The message is incredible.
It is.
The last message is incredible. Make the most of whatever you have. You don't need to relive it, you know? So while we are... Right, we have to be sad. We have to pray for those that we've lost. Mm. But
and those who are suffering.
Yeah, currently, you're right.
I think religious and spirituality plays a huge role.
So they were religious.
Yeah, totally. Of course, hello. I know, it's not like me to have good, pious, religious friends.
No, it's not actually normal to have a set of friends and that's it, you know? What I mean is they got over it for themselves,
right?
No, they
didn't get over it at all. They coped with it. They're still trying to figure out how to navigate their way around, you know, the state of things. And they compromise, I think, here and there. But I really believe that spirituality and religion played a huge role in grounding them, you know?
So you think that whatever goes on, for example, I'm emotionally connected to people, and I see them dying. Many people die every day. Well, it's lower down now, but at its peak, it was thousands, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying that that's the way to deal with it, and that's the only sole way to deal with it.
Is there, by dealing with it, do you mean preventing those deaths?
No, is it even possible? No, it's not.
It's not. So dealing with, yes, I really do believe that religion is the only way to deal with it. You know, if it's taken out of context, it could be very inconsiderate. But at the end of the day, we have to believe that we're all bound for the grave. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. We are from God and to God we will return. Right?
Hmm.
So one day it's the pandemic, one day it's a car accident.
My Lord, show me right from wrong. Give me light, make me strong. I know the road is long. Make me strong. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost. I know the road is love. Make me strong.
So my point is, we're all going to die at the end of the day, bro. But
right.
if we settle with that as the truest truth, like Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam has said, and if we embrace it, and if we just keep reminding ourselves, if we live life the Islamic way that tells us not to cower away from death, tells us to embrace death, tells us that it's the truest truth, tells us that it's going to find us no matter where we are. We're going to be careful in a state of pandemic, but we're still going to be like, alhamdulillah ala kulli hal. If it's my father, if it's my neighbor's father, if it's my colleague's father, if it's, you know,
mm-hmm.
a stranger's father. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I sort of do.
But
isn't it natural for someone to suffer mentally, you know? It's
of course.
Yeah, so
I'm not saying someone dies and, you know, you just go sip your chai.
Right. So, how many Muslims do we have in the world? 1.7 billion, right? What about the people who are not Muslims, right? What do they do? There are people who are not Muslims, not religious, but they've coped well with the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
What do you think they did?
I think, again, they embraced life for more than...
So, if I conclude correctly...
More than what it is, yeah.
What you're saying is, by religion, you mean accepting the truth, right?
Yeah, sure.
No, because these people are not religious at all. For example, they might be atheists for all we know.
Mm. But they're still spiritual, quote unquote.
Yeah, there's this thing that's going on recently, right? Gnostics.
And I don't necessarily I think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. We're going to go off the topic if we get into
it. How are you coping with the pandemic, if coping at all?
Great.
Guys, you should see the level of sarcasm on his face. His left eye was twitching. It had a sudden nervous spasm when he said great.
It's the most beautiful thing that happened to me. Anyway.
You're a horrible liar. You have a baby, right?
Yeah.
How old is she, if I may ask?
A little younger than 2 years old.
How's she coping with the pandemic?
She has no idea what's going on.
Really? Does she not want to go out?
Yes, she does. She goes out to the yard and stuff like that, plays around, but she doesn't realize that there's a world outside the yard.
Okay, all right, makes sense.
It should be easy.
Are you going crazy?
I was wearing the mask and stuff like that. I was doing the things that I was usually doing, so it wasn't much of a difference.
Okay.
Yeah, and when it comes to lessons and stuff like that, that was the best thing that could happen, you know.
Online classes.
Yeah.
Right.
So in that sense, perfect for me.
Is your wife coping okay?
Initially, it was a bit tough for her.
Definitely.
But then we decided that, you know, she should just join me on the wagon and just go on, you know. So she started going out to her friends and stuff like that, wearing a mask, and, you know. So, yeah, she pretty much got used to it. I was talking about people accepting that this is the truth, is it?
Yeah, this is the truth.
Right. So as a person who does not believe in an afterlife, the least he could do or they could do is that they submit, right, to the truth. Being worried or being harsh on ourselves is not going to change the fact that, you know, we are headed towards that very thing that we're sad about.
Whose fault is this? I mean, sure, there are people, absolute scumbags, who are going to milk this situation for their own benefits and, I don't know, hoard toilet paper or masks or the stockholders that are just getting richer and richer, the billionaires that are becoming cajillionaires because of the state of pandemic or the Amazon or whatever. There's still going to be those people, right, who are going to exploit the situation and people's struggle in order to fill their pockets. But at the end of the day, like you said, you know, we just have to make the best of the situation we have. The situation we have is being in a state of lockdown, no longer being able to interact with our friends, no longer being able to go out and have fun, and even losing some loved ones, we just have to process that and try to analyze and see, what am I supposed to learn from this? Mm-hmm. But then again, it's really easy for me and you to say, we didn't lose our job, we didn't lose our house, we didn't lose someone really significant to us. I lost a lot of friends,
to be
honest. I think
also talking about it is also something that we need, you know. Keeping it inside is actually...
Yeah, just keep talking about it, normalize it, create that window for people to vent.
I was talking about people actually venting it out, you know.
Yeah.
They should actually do that. Some people actually see it as a sign of weakness, but it actually isn't, you know. You're a natural human being. There's no reason or logical reason for you to put out this face that you don't need, right? And just let it out, you know. Talk to it.
I would also suggest to those who are still in lockdown to adopt a pet.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. Yeah.
What was that face?
No, I was thinking about it. I was like, no, seriously? And then I realized...
Yeah, to adopt a pet or get a really pretty plant that needs a lot of attending, you know?
Yeah, lily plant.
Exactly. It keeps you busy and engaged, and it makes you feel productive to see life growth within your threshold.
To see
life grow. Thank you for being with us on today's episode of Back to Reality. Wherever you guys are, we are sending you positive energy, love and care and prayers so that we can inshallah, make it through the state of pandemic and come out of it alive. Or if we, even if we die, may our afterlife be beautiful and peaceful. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Even as Texas struggled to restore electricity and water over the past week, signs of the risk posed by increasingly extreme weather to America's aging infrastructure were cropping up across the country. The week's continent-spanning winter storms triggered blackouts in Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, and several other states. One-third of oil production in the nation was halted. Drinking water systems in Ohio were knocked offline. Road networks nationwide were paralyzed. And vaccination efforts in 20 states were disrupted. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Christopher Flavelle, Brad Plummer, and Hiroku Tabuchi. The piece is titled Texas Blackouts Point to Coast-to-Coast Crises Waiting to Happen. Stay with us for more. Even as Texas struggled to restore electricity and water supplies over the past week, signs of the risk posed by increasingly extreme weather to America's aging infrastructure were cropping up across the country. The week's continent-spanning winter storms triggered blackouts in Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, and several other states. One-third of oil production in the nation was halted. Drinking water systems in Ohio were knocked offline. Road networks nationwide were paralyzed. And vaccination efforts in 20 states were disrupted. The crisis carries a profound warning. As climate change brings more frequent and intense storms, floods, heat waves, wildfires, and other extreme events, it is placing growing stress on the foundations of America's economy. Its network of roads and railways, drinking water systems, power plants, electrical grids, industrial waste sites, and even homes. Failures in just one sector can set off a domino effect of breakdowns in hard-to-predict ways. Much of this infrastructure was built decades ago, under the expectation that the environment around it would remain stable, or at least fluctuate within predictable bounds. Now, climate change is upending that assumption. "We are colliding with a future of extremes," said Alice Hill, who oversaw planning for climate risks on the National Security Council during the Obama administration. "We base all our choices about risk management on what's occurred in the past, and that is no longer a safe guide." While it's not always possible to say precisely how global warming influenced any one particular storm, scientists say an overall rise in extreme weather creates sweeping new risks. Sewer systems are overflowing more often as powerful rainstorms exceed their design capacity. Coastal homes and highways are collapsing as intensified runoff erodes cliffs. Coal ash, the toxic residue produced by coal-burning plants, is spilling into rivers as floods overwhelm barriers meant to hold it back. Homes once beyond the reach of wildfires are burning in blazes they were never designed to withstand. Problems like these often reflect an inclination of governments to spend as little money as possible, said Shalini Vaihala, a former Obama administration official who now advises cities on meeting climate threats. She said it's hard to persuade taxpayers to spend extra money to guard against disasters that seem unlikely. But climate change flips that logic, making inaction far costlier. Shalini Vaihala says, "The argument I would make is we can't afford not to, because we're absorbing the costs." Adding, "After disasters strike, we're spending poorly." The Biden administration has talked extensively about climate change, particularly the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and create jobs in renewable energies. But it has spent less time discussing how to manage the growing effects of climate change, facing criticism from experts for not appointing more people who focus on climate resilience. "I'm extremely concerned by the lack of emergency management expertise reflected in Biden's climate team," says Samantha Montano, an assistant professor at the Massachusetts Maritime Academy who focuses on disaster policy. Samantha Montano added, "There's an urgency here that still is not being reflected." A White House spokesman, Vedant Patel, said in a statement, "Building resilient and sustainable infrastructure that can withstand extreme weather and a changing climate will play an integral role in creating millions of good-paying union jobs, whilst cutting greenhouse gas emissions." And while President Joe Biden has called for a major push to refurbish and upgrade the nation's infrastructure, getting a closely divided Congress to spend hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, will be a major challenge. Heightening the cost to society, disruptions can disproportionately affect lower-income households and other vulnerable groups, including older people, or those with limited English. "All these issues are converging," said Robert Bullard, a professor at Texas Southern University who studies wealth and racial disparities relating to the environment. "And there's simply no place in this country that's not going to have to deal with climate change," Robert Bullard added. In September, when a southern storm dumped a record of more than 2 inches of water on Washington in less than 75 minutes, the result wasn't just widespread flooding, but also raw sewage rushing into hundreds of homes. Washington, like many other cities in the Northeast and Midwest, relies on what's called a combined sewer overflow system. A downpour overwhelms storm drains along the street. They are built to overflow into the pipes that carry raw sewage. But if there's too much pressure, sewage can be pushed backwards into people's homes, where the forces can send it erupting from toilets and shower drains. This is what happened in Washington. The city's system was built in the late 1800s. Now climate change is straining an already outdated design. Washington, D.C. Water, the local utility, is spending billions of dollars so that the system can hold more sewage. We're sort of in uncharted territory, said Vincent Morris, a utility spokesman. The challenge of managing and taming the nation's water supplies, whether in streets and homes or in vast rivers and watersheds, is growing increasingly complex as storms intensify. Last May, rain-swollen flooding breached two dams in central Michigan, forcing thousands of residents to flee their homes and threatening a chemical complex and toxic waste cleanup site. Experts warned it was unlikely to be the last such failure. Many of the country's 90,000 dams were built decades ago and were already in dire need of repairs. Now, climate change poses an additional threat, bringing heavier downpours to parts of the country and raising the odds that some dams could be overwhelmed by more water than they were designed to handle. One recent study found that most of California's biggest dams were at increased risk of failure as global warming advances. In recent years, dam safety officials have begun grappling with the dangers. Colorado, for instance, now requires dam builders to take into account the risk of increased atmospheric moisture driven by climate change as they plan for worst-case flooding scenarios. But nationwide, there remains a backlog of thousands of older dams that still need to be rehabilitated or upgraded. The price tag could ultimately stretch to more than $70 billion. Whenever we study dam failures, we often find there was a lot of complacency beforehand, according to Bill McCormick, president of the Association of State Dam Safety Officials. But given that failures can have catastrophic consequences, we really can't afford to be complacent. If the Texas blackouts exposed one state's poor planning, they also provide a warning for the nation. Climate change threatens virtually every aspect of electricity grids that aren't always designed to handle increasingly severe weather. The vulnerabilities show up in power lines, in natural gas plants, in nuclear reactors, and myriad other systems. Higher storm surges can knock out coastal power infrastructure. Deeper droughts can reduce water supplies for hydroelectric dams. Severe heat waves can reduce the efficiency of fossil fuel generators. Transmission lines and even solar panels at precisely the moment that demand soars because everyone cranks up their air conditioning. Climate hazards can also combine in new and unforeseen ways. In California, for example, Pacific Gas and Electric has had to shut off electricity to thousands of people during exceptionally dangerous wildfire seasons. The reason? Downed power lines can spark huge wildfires in dry vegetation. Then, during a record hot August last year, several of the state's natural gas plants malfunctioned in the heat, just as demand was spiking, contributing to blackouts. We have to get better at understanding these compound impacts, said Michael Craig, an expert in energy systems at the University of Michigan, who recently led a study looking at how rising summer temperatures in Texas could strain the national grid in unexpected ways. It's an incredibly complex problem to plan for. Some utilities are taking notice. After Superstorm Sandy in 2012 knocked out power lines for 8.7 million customers, utilities in New York and New Jersey invested billions of dollars in flood walls, submersible equipment and other technology to reduce the risk of failures. Last month, New York's Con Edison said it would incorporate climate projections into its planning. As freezing temperatures struck Texas this week, a glitch at one of two reactors at a South Texas nuclear plant, which serves 2 million homes, triggered a shutdown of the system. The cause? Sensing lines connected to the plant's water pumps had frozen, according to Victor Driggs, a spokesman for the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Agency, NRA. It's also common for extreme heat to disrupt nuclear power. The issue is that the water used to cool reactors can become too warm to use, forcing shutdowns. Flooding is another risk. After a tsunami led to several meltdowns at Japan's Fukushima Daiichi power plant in 2011, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC, told the 60 or so working nuclear plants in the United States, many decades old, to evaluate their flood risk to account for climate change. 90% showed at least one type of flood risk that exceeded what the plant was designed to handle. The greatest risk came from heavy rain and snowfall exceeding the design parameters at 53 nuclear plants. Scott Burnell, a Nuclear Regulatory Commission NRC spokesman, said in a statement, "The NRC continues to conclude, based on the staff's review of detailed analyses, that all U.S. nuclear power plants can appropriately deal with potential flooding events, including the effects of climate change, and remain safe."
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, the difference between justice and equality. Sometimes justice is confused with equality, and it seems that the meaning of justice is that equality should be maintained, whereas this is not so. Equality is not a condition for justice. Rather, rights and priorities must be considered. As an example, justice in a classroom of students is not that they all receive equal grades, and justice between two workers is not that they receive equal wages. Rather, justice is in this, that each student be graded according to his knowledge and ability, and each worker be judged according to his work and activity. In the world of nature also, justice in the extensive sense means just this. If the heart of a whale, which weighs 1 ton, be compared to the heart of a sparrow, which is perhaps not more than 1 gram in weight, if they were equal, there would be no justice. And if the roots of a very small tree were equal to the roots of a small plant, this is not justice. and is equivalent to oppression. Justice is that every creature receives its rights in proportion to its abilities. This is what justice is. See how it's different from equality, right? There is a grave and fundamental difference between the two. But sometimes, you know, when people discuss these concepts, they mix them up and they get confused. So remember, justice is not equality, and equality is not justice. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the difference between justice and equality. We see in our societies, sometimes when people are discussing these concepts, they use these terms interchangeably. Well, this is not a correct approach. When it comes to justice, compared to equality, these two are completely different things. And they are not related. They are not prerequisites of each other either. Justice is the quality of being fair, while equality is the state of being equal. Justice has nothing to do with equality except in the purely formal sense, that if, for instance, a rule is applied to everyone, it follows that it is applied equally to everyone. Two people who commit the same crime deserve the same punishment, under the same circumstances, of course, and so on and so forth. So see what justice is and what equality is. Equality is not by itself a normative concept. It simply means sameness with respect to a property, whereas identity is sameness with respect to all properties. So next time when you're having a discussion and the term justice comes up, don't in your head let it mix with equality. Equality does not mean justice. Justice does not mean equality. So when we talk about, let's say, gender equality, for instance, you know, this is another instance where all of these discussions, they become fruitless because these two terms are not kept segregated and separated. So know these two concepts and know that there's a difference between justice and equality. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
A persistent concern over homeschooling as a result of COVID-19 has been that it is causing new inequalities in children's education. The closure of schools means children's learning has relied increasingly on their family's social and domestic circumstances. The pandemic has shown that the poorest families in the UK do not have access to the resources necessary to educate children at home. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article authored by Martin Myers under the heading, Homeschooling Links with Inequality Are Far From New. This article has appeared on the front page of fees.org. Please stay with us to hear more about this issue. In 2020, the coronavirus pandemic has made homeschooling a fact of life. Though even before this, what was once the obscure choice of a few families has grown in popularity over the past decade. In 2019, the Children's Commissioner for England estimated that around 60,000 children were homeschooled. A persistent concern over homeschooling as a result of COVID-19 has been that it is causing new inequalities in children's education. The closure of schools means children's learning has relied increasingly on their family's social and domestic circumstances. The pandemic has shown that the poorest families in the UK do not have access to the resources necessary to educate children at home. But focusing on the effects of the pandemic overlooks two important and interconnected points. The first is that persistent educational inequalities are a feature of schools too. The second is that schools and homeschooling operate in close relation to each other. Martin Mies wrote, "My research has found that inequality has long been a feature of homeschooling, and this often stems from inequalities in schools." One of the clearest examples of the links between inequalities in school and homeschooling is off-rolling, when schools informally persuade parents to homeschool their children. Off-rolling can be attractive to schools because, in principle, it means limited resources such as teacher time are not squandered on difficult individual pupils. It is difficult to identify the number of pupils who have been off-rolled. But research by the UK's Education Inspection Body, the Office for Standards in Education, suggests that that is on the rise. The Ofsted findings also indicate that off-rolling was mostly initiated by senior leaders in secondary schools to remove children with behavioral problems, poor attendance, and special educational needs. The research has found that children most likely to be off-rolled were of an ethnic minority and poorer backgrounds. They are a mirror image of the children who always seem to be let down in schools. For example, racist stereotypes about gypsy and troubled children often identify them as difficult, problematic pupils unlikely to succeed academically. As the children most likely to be excluded from schools, their educational outcomes are very poor. The evidence of poor results is itself cited to justify racist beliefs. Similar patterns emerge around other ethnic groups and working class pupils. These biases held by senior school leaders inform decisions to off-roll some pupils, supposedly protect the academic performance of the whole school. Off-rolling is an example of how educational inequalities within schools lead to some poorer ethnic minority pupils becoming homeschooled. Their limited access to money and other resources compromises their education both in and out of schools. Before the pandemic, media accounts of parents making the choice of homeschool often emphasize positive stories. Typically, these portray affluent families embarking on an existing adventure and taking back control of their children's education. Unlike the families of children who are off-rolled, these families have greater financial security and other resources that make such life-changing decisions possible. Though for many families, the choice to take their children out of school is no choice at all. Instead, it is a response to problems over which they have no control. Commonplace examples include the families of children who experience racism in schools that refuse to acknowledge that racism exists in their classrooms, and those of children with special educational needs that are not matched by school support. These families describe homeschooling as a better option for their children, but not the best option. The author of this article said they often struggle with limited access to resources and identify the best option as mainstream schooling that could meet their children's educational needs. This brings us to the nub of the problems facing families in the lockdown. Many families have limited resources. Mardin noted, in 2020, during the first lockdown and after the closure of schools and cancellation of exams, I was involved in research conducted by the universities of Nottingham and Birmingham to carry out a survey of more than 500 A-level students studying at home. He added, our preliminary studies, new research which has not yet been published in a peer-reviewed journal, suggests that students from ethnic minorities, poorer backgrounds, and state schools were most fearful that the cancellation of exams would negatively affect their grades. They pointed out that inequalities associated with race and ethnicity as well as family income affected their experience of schooling in the past as well as homeschooling in the present. Martin concluded this research predated the A-level grade moderation scandal, in which students from disadvantaged backgrounds and ethnic minorities tended to receive worse results, while students at private schools benefited from the moderation process. It was striking that the students in our research anticipated and predicted the unfairness of this process. He added, if nothing else, COVID-19 has demonstrated that homeschooling does not exist in isolation. It is enmeshed in broader educational practice, social life, and all their associated inequalities. It is too easy to view inequalities that have materialized for homeschool children now as an unfortunate and unforeseen consequence of the pandemic.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a televised speech delivered on January 8, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the anniversary of an uprising led by the people of the city of Qom on January 9, 1978.
The result of the US's presence in our country was economic and scientific poverty, corruption, and cultural decadence. They created such a condition in our country. Now, some people think that if we interact, make up, and become good friends with the US, the country will become something of a paradise. No, that will not be the case, and you only need to look at the pre-revolutionary era to see what things were like back then. Look at those countries which exchange loving words with the US to see in what condition they are. You can clearly see their economic and scientific condition. There are some countries in our own region, but I do not want to mention their names. You yourselves know which countries I'm speaking about. Of course, even after the victory of our great revolution, the US did not stop its plots. The US is after achieving the same hellish domination over our country. Not only our country, but also the whole region.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Some people ask, what is the difference between the US and such and such a European country? The difference lies in this fact. Because the US used to ensure its interest for many years in Iran, because it had built itself a nice home here, and because it considers itself to be the superior power, it wants to restore the previous conditions. This is what makes the Iranian nation vigilant and careful. Of course, some treacherous countries in the region are helping it as well. I wish to add that in the current circumstances, the US finds its interest in creating instability in the region until it manages to achieve complete domination over the region. Until then, it finds its interest in creating instability in the region. This is being acknowledged explicitly by themselves. A well-known expert in a famous American organization, the American Enterprise Institute, if I mention his name, those who are interested in political work will organize him easily, said this openly. He said that they are not after creating stability in Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. He does not just mention Iran. Rather, he mentions Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, saying that they are not interested in stability in those countries.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah.
Around the world with reporters.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip held a press conference aimed at expressing the refusal of the recent normalization of ties with Israeli regime. The conference comes as a code of ethics for Palestinian journalists and media institutes to stress the rejection for normalizing ties with Israel.
We condemn the recent normalization of ties with Israel. We held this conference as a code of ethics for journalists and media institutes to reveal the Israeli violations and normalization of ties with the Israeli regime. The normalization of ties remains a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
A number of Palestinian leaders, activists, and journalists attended the conference and condemned establishing Israeli relations, stressing that no deal can bring peace to Israel in the West Asia. Palestinian journalists and activists added that media has a significant role in conveying the true image of the inhumane Israeli regime and refused any normalization of ties with Israel in terms of media.
Normalizing ties with Israel is a way to justify the inhumane nature of Israel. The recent normalization of ties with Israel is a betrayal of the Palestinian cause, and we won't accept any recognition of Israel at the expense of Palestinians.
Palestinians call on Arab and Muslim nations to end these normalization of ties with Israel that aims to demolish the historical Palestinian cause.
Palestinian activists are all united to say that normalization of ties with Israel is a betrayal of all Palestinians. Media should stand against these attempts to demolish the Palestinian cause. All Arabs and Muslims should stop recognizing Israel as a state.
So far, a number of Arab states have normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. The move has sparked harsh criticism among the Muslim nations.
Palestinians here stress they strongly refuse to recognize Israel and reject the normalization of ties with the Tel Aviv regime by certain countries. They say the resistance is ongoing and no deal can bring peace to Israel at the expense of Palestinians. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
The average student in the United States today leaves college with $37,000 of debt from student loans. University tuition has risen 1,200% since the late 1970s.
Those younger than 24, called Generation Z, face the same prospect of expensive higher education combined with national economic stagnation since 2008. While on the campaign trail, Democrats raised major hopes with talk of an executive order canceling up to $50,000 in student debt. But President Joe Biden just declared, quote, "I will not make that happen," and he will only consider $10,000 in debt relief.
Student debt is parasitic. It's very right-wing. Joe Biden isn't centrist. He's right-wing. He's always been right-wing. If this person said that he had the capability to do it, which he does, and he said he does, and he's not going to do it because it sets the wrong precedent, then you're going to have a bunch of angry people.
Such huge amounts of debt has forced the millennial class to often delay mature steps, like buying a house, investing, pursuing a graduate degree, marriage, and children. That all depresses the economy, creates more social instability and disharmony, and all the while, economic inequality skyrockets in favor of the moneylenders.
I have $28,000 in student debt. Under capitalism, like, college can be a very predatory thing. You're betting the rest of your life to, like, being able to make these payments. And this is going to create more distrust for the Democrats. This is going to embolden more people that might be Republican that also have a lot of student debt to not trust this person.
The student debt crisis is seemingly a uniquely American issue, but 45 million Americans owe almost $2 trillion in student debt. The immense scope of the problem seems to ensure that the nation's young adults will keep this issue in the limelight for years, or maybe even decades, until either debt relief is granted or wages massively rise. Rami Mazahari, Chicago.
The scramble for vaccines has exposed global inequality yet again. Rich economies, including the US, EU, and the UK, have collectively secured more than double the amount they need, 3 billion doses, and administered 75% of the vaccines actually in existence. But in dozens of countries, no one has been vaccinated.
We are more than a little bit concerned that there is
or is to be hoarding and price gouging, as well as undue preference in some quarters. This being so, we at CARICOM have recently called upon WHO to immediately convene an international convention of the world's people's representatives to commit